Good morning. Greetings in the precious name of Jesus. Happy to be with you here this morning. I also bring greetings from the Lenawee congregation. I invite your attention to the book of Exodus for a starting passage. I have a message this morning that I would like to share this morning, and I confess that I have shared it before. So I do give that disclaimer this morning. I don't enjoy hearing that when I'm in the audience and I hear a speaker saying that, but that is the shoes that I'm in this morning. So if you can bear with me on that, this is a message that is personal to me and something that I work with on a seemingly a regular basis. But I'll give the title here momentarily. In the book of Exodus chapter 18, I would like to read several verses. In Exodus 18, we have the account of Moses and his father-in-law. I'd like to break in the chapter in verse 13 of chapter 18 and read through verse 27. Verse 13 says, "And it came to pass on the morrow that Moses sat to judge the people, and the people stood by Moses from the morning unto the evening. And when Moses' father-in-law saw all that he did to the people, he said, What is this thing that thou doest to the people? Why sittest thou thyself alone, and all the people stand by thee from morning unto even? And Moses said unto his father-in-law, Because the people come unto me to inquire of God. When they have a matter, they come unto me, and I judge between one and another, and I do make them know the statutes of God and his laws. And Moses' father-in-law said unto him, The thing that thou doest is not good. Thou wilt surely wear away, both thou and this people that is with thee, for this thing is too heavy for thee. Thou art not able to perform it thyself alone. Hearken now unto my voice. I will give thee counsel, and God shall be with thee. Be thou for the people to Godward, that thou mayest bring the causes unto God. And thou shalt teach them ordinances and laws, and shalt show them the way wherein that they must walk, and the work that they must do. Moreover, thou shalt provide out of all the people able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness, and place such over them to be rulers of thousands and rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties and rulers of tens. And let them judge the people all seasons, and it shall be that every great matter they shall bring unto thee, but every small matter they shall judge. So shall it be easier for thyself, and they shall bear the burden with thee. If thou do this thing, and God command thee so, then thou shalt be able to endure, and all this people shall also go to their place in peace." So Moses hearkened to the voice of his father-in-law, and did all that he had said. And Moses chose able men out of all Israel, and made them heads over the people, rulers of thousands, rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties, and rulers of tens. And they judged the people at all seasons. The hard causes they brought unto Moses, but every small matter they judged themselves. And Moses let his father-in-law depart, and he went his way into his own land. Now, if you care to, you can turn over to the book of Numbers. I have another passage I want to read. Numbers chapter 12. In our last account that we read, Moses was one of the main characters. And I want you to pay attention in this next account, in Numbers 12, how that Moses is again one of the main characters. But there's some different things happening. Numbers chapter 12 and verse 1, it says, And Miriam and Aaron spake against Moses because of the Ethiopian woman whom he had married, for he had married an Ethiopian woman. And they said, Hath the Lord indeed spoken only by Moses? Hath he not spoken also by us? And the Lord heard it. Now the man Moses was very meek above all the men which were upon the face of the earth. And the Lord spake suddenly unto Moses, and unto Aaron, and unto Miriam, Come out, ye three, unto the tabernacle of the congregation. And they three came out. And the Lord came down in the pillar of the cloud, and stood in the door of the tabernacle, and called Aaron and Miriam, and they both came forth. And he said, Hear now my words. If there be a prophet among you, I, the Lord, will make myself known unto him in a vision, and will speak unto him in a dream. My servant Moses is not so, who is faithful in all mine house. With him will I speak mouth to mouth, even apparently, and not in dark speeches. And the similitude of the Lord shall he behold. Wherefore, then, were ye not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? And the anger of the Lord was kindled against them, and he departed. And the cloud departed from off the tabernacle, and behold, Miriam became leprous, white as snow. And Aaron looked upon Miriam, and behold, she was leprous. And Aaron said unto Moses, Alas, my Lord, I beseech thee, lay not the sin upon us, wherein we have done foolishly, and wherein we have sinned. Let her not be as one dead, of whom the flesh is half consumed, when he cometh out of his mother's womb. And Moses cried unto the Lord, saying, Heal her now, O God, I beseech thee. And the Lord said unto Moses, If her father had but spit in her face, should she not be ashamed 7 days? Let her be shut out from the camp 7 days, and after that let her be received in again. And Miriam was shut out from the camp 7 days, and the people journeyed not till Miriam was brought in again. And afterward the people removed from Hazeroth and pitched in the wilderness of Paran. Now, in these two accounts, you will notice that there was a need, and there also, in response to the need, there was advice or slash criticism that was given, but the end result was very, very different. And we asked the question, what makes the difference? The title of my message this morning is Criticism, Constructive or Destructive? What makes the difference? When Jethro gave criticism to Moses with how Moses was leading and handling the congregation of Israel, and when Moses was criticized by Aaron and Miriam, there was a huge difference. What makes the difference? And I think we're all human enough, and we're all aware enough that this whole idea of criticism is not a foreign concept, is it? If you're like me, you wish it would be a little more foreign than what it is. You just feel like sometimes you get criticized and you're totally innocent. And also, if you're like me, you realize how easy it is to criticize situations, circumstances, people, the list goes on. But the word criticize, to my knowledge, isn't even in the Bible. And yet the concept of it is very, very real to us as human beings. There's a couple synonyms or words with synonymous meaning in the Bible that typically tend to gravitate towards a negative connotation of criticism. I'll just give you a couple of them you can think about. In Exodus 16 and verse 7, it says, And in the morning, then ye shall see the glory of the Lord, for that he heareth your murmurings against the Lord. And what are we that ye murmur against us? That word murmur has some of the same ideas as negative criticism. There's another word that you'll find in the New Testament, the word busybody. In 1 Timothy 5 verse 13, uses that word, talks about being busybodies. That has the idea of overseeing others' affairs, a meddler, just sticking your nose and being involved where it shouldn't be, and being critical. Another synonym would be the word chide, used in the Old Testament a lot more than the New. In verse 2 of chapter 17 of Exodus, it says, Wherefore the people did chide with Moses, and said, Give us water that we may drink. And Moses said unto them, Why chide ye with me? Wherefore do ye tempt the Lord? Again, some of the same ideas. Another word is complain, which we're fairly familiar with that one. Discontent. In 1 Samuel 22, this is a situation where David was running from Saul. And it says, "And everyone that was in distress, and everyone that was in debt, and everyone that was discontented gathered themselves unto him, and he became a captain over them, and there were with him about 400 men." That whole idea of being discontented in that connotation has some of the same ideas of just critical and especially negative criticism. I'd like to give a little story. There was a man that had a mule, and the man was getting older, and the cost of feeding his mule was just becoming a burden to him. But he had a friend that lived just down the road that had a woodworking shop, and his friend had told him, he says, "Anytime you ever need sawdust," he said, "I have plenty of it. You just come and help yourself." So the gentleman thought he would try to wean his mule from hay and grain onto a diet of sawdust because of cost and availability and so on. So he gradually just lessened the hay and the grain and increased the sawdust. And they say he almost had the mule trained and completely weaned onto sawdust, and the mule died. Now we can look on and we can say that the mule died of old age, or the mule died of COVID, or the mule possibly died of malnutrition. It's just a story. But I want you to think about the practicality and the reality of such a bizarre idea. Okay? This whole idea of criticism, somebody has said, criticism is something that we can avoid easily simply by saying nothing, doing nothing, and being nothing. Sounds about as practical as weaning your mule from hay and grain to sawdust, doesn't it? It just doesn't work. And if you're like me, sometimes I just feel like, just like that, I'm just not going to speak into anything, and so therefore I don't want anybody to speak in at me. I'm not going to do anything. We're just going to just isolate ourselves and stay off the side because I just don't want to be criticized. I don't want to be condemned. You don't condemn me, I won't condemn you. We'll just keep it. It doesn't work. That's not reality. That's not real life. Somebody else has said, constructive criticism is when I criticize you. Destructive criticism is when you criticize me. That comes pretty close to home. It's not true, but I think we can relate. Next, I want to look at, real quickly, I want to look at four, what I call seed beds for destructive criticism. Now, a seed bed is very obvious. You know what that is. But when you have the perfect soil, perfect moisture, perfect temperature, if you drop a seed in it, it's just going to take off and grow. And I want to look at four seed beds that when a seed of circumstance in your life drops into it, it's most likely going to take off and grow into a negative or destructive criticism. Number one, if you care to, you can turn to 1 Samuel 18. I'll read a couple verses. 1 Samuel 18. I'm just going to read the first 9 verses here. Verse 1 says, "And it came to pass, when he had made an end of speaking unto Saul, that the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David. And Jonathan loved him as his own soul. And Saul took him that day, and would let him go no more home to his father's house. Then Jonathan and David made a covenant, because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was upon him, and gave it to David and his garments, even to his sword, and to his bow, and to his girdle. And David went out whithersoever Saul sent him, and behaved himself wisely. And Saul set him over the men of war, and he was accepted in the sight of all the people. and also in the sight of Saul's servants. And it came to pass as they came, when David was returned from the slaughter of the Philistine, that the women came out of all the cities of Israel, singing and dancing to meet King Saul, with tabrets, with joy, and with instruments of music. And the women answered one another as they played, and said, Saul hath slain his thousands, but David his 10,000s. And Saul was very wroth, and the saying displeased him. And he said, They have ascribed unto David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed but thousands. And what can he have more but the kingdom? And Saul eyed David from that day forward. The first seedbed I call the pity me attitude. When everybody else is better than me, this is, to me, it's so clear in this account we just read that Saul said, they have ascribed to David 10,000, and to me they've only ascribed thousands. It's so, life is so unfair. Everybody else has it better than me. It's just horrible. It's just not fair. When you have that mindset and life drops a seed of, through circumstances or whatever it is, 9 times out of 10, it'll take off, it'll grow, and it'll be a negative or a destructive criticism that grows from that. Number two, second seed bed is when we have what I call judgment before trial. And if that's a term that's used in the laws and the courts of the land, but have you ever noticed it, or have you ever had it, experienced it yourself, where the person with a critical spirit will often know why so-and-so got the new vehicle that they did, or why their children acted the way they did, or why they don't come to visit, nobody ever comes to visit them, or nobody invites them to go on picnics together with them, or the list just goes on and on and on. When we have that mindset that we know and everybody has it in for us, it's like we already convict them and they're already guilty before we even know the circumstances. And when we have that mindset and something like that happens and pops into our life, again, if we let it go, it'll just almost always take off and be destructive criticism, and we'll be critical and we'll criticize that in a negative sense. Number three is when we use concern to mask what is really enviousness or jealousy. We already read in Exodus 18 the situation of Aaron and Miriam when they criticized Moses. They criticized Moses because of who he married. But it seems like the underlying deeper root issue was that they were critical and they were unhappy with how much Moses was called to lead and they were not. And they masked their enviousness or their jealousy by using concern. And that's not real far away from the human heart today yet, I don't think. Number four, the fear of failure and or inadequacy. And I just simply use the example of Moses when God called him originally to go to Pharaoh. You can read about that in Exodus 4. God called Moses, and Moses said, I just can't go. I can't speak. I'm just not eloquent. I'm not able. And the list went on and on. While there is some truth to that, many of us are not qualified and not really capable and able of doing what we're called to do. When we dwell on that and when we have that mindset and we let that go too far, when God does call us or when life gives us something, it'll often, that seedbed will turn into being something negative, a negative criticism, destructive criticism. We'll criticize the people who ask us to do it. We'll criticize the circumstances, will criticize the hard things that go with it, and typically doesn't turn out very well. Next, I want to look real quick at four, I'll call them pillars. This is on a positive note. Four characteristics or four pillars of constructive criticism. And then I want to look in a number of points in a, just a practical everyday life, how it all plays out. Number one for positive criticism is they will ask questions from a sincere, caring heart, or they will engage in discussion before criticizing. Do you remember the account when Jesus and the woman taken in adultery in John 8? What did Jesus do? She had plenty of accusations thrown at her. She had plenty of criticism, but Jesus, with a little bit of time, he asked her, "Where are thine accusers? And hath no man condemned thee?" And Jesus engaged in conversation with her, and to find out, well, Jesus already knew, but the lesson for us is if we can ask questions from a sincere, caring heart to know a little bit what instigated the action, to know what happened or what led up to this or why, before we just automatically write them off or criticize them. That is a pillar for constructive criticism, is when you ask questions. Think about the account in John 4 of Jesus and the woman at the well. Again, he engaged in conversation with her and he asked her about her life and what was going on. Same with Jesus and the disciples, especially Philip, in John 14. I'm not going to turn there, not going to read that this morning. But ask questions from a sincere, caring heart is a pillar for constructive criticism. Number two, very simple, very elementary, but they treat others the way they want to be treated. That is a principle and a pillar for constructive criticism. Think about simply the golden rule in Luke 6:31. It says, "And as ye would that men should do to you, do ye also to them likewise." When you have that mentality, when you have that principle guiding your life, you will be able to give and have constructive criticism. Number three, it's marked by honesty and clarity or frankness. Think about the account in John 13, the feet washing, when Peter said, "You know, Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" And Peter said, "You're not going to wash my feet." And Jesus said, if I don't wash your feet, you have no part with me." And then he says, "You know, wash not just my feet, but my head and my hands as well." Jesus was clear. Jesus was honest. And he just simply, kindly explained it. I think about the account of Aquila and Priscilla teaching Apollos in the book of Acts. Excuse me. Apollos seemed to have some things a little bit skewed, a little bit off, a little bit off key, so to speak. And afterwards, Aquila and Priscilla took him off the side and explained things to him. But the pillar of constructive criticism is marked by honesty and clarity or frankness. And number four, very simple, but they are always seeking the other person's best interest. It simply means that you get on their level, you meet them on their turf, you speak their language. Again, it's kind of a repeat of what's been said, but constructive criticism, a pillar of constructive criticism is when you always seek the other person's best interest. Now, I want to move to the last part of the message. I think I have 6 points. Very basic, practical things that I want us to think about, and hopefully we can learn some things from in regards to this whole concept. Again, you may find it, the concept, that it would be easier if we just didn't have to deal with this. If I don't have to criticize, I mean, if no one criticizes me, then I won't criticize anybody else. Again, I just want to say that's not real, that's not reality, that's not real life, because number one explains why that's not reality, not real life. Number one is no man is totally self-reliant. all of us need some help from our fellow man. None of us has it all put together. None of us does everything perfect. In Romans 14, verse 7, it says, "For none of us liveth to himself, and no man dieth to himself." And then also in 1 Corinthians 4, verse 7, it says, "For who maketh thee to differ from another? And what hast thou that thou didst not receive? Now if thou didst receive it, why dost thou glory as if thou hadst not received it?" You know, we must listen. It seems sometimes that we are so intent on avoiding criticism that we can't even reach our full potential. And I think that's native to the human heart, but it's a warning sign. It's not a sin to need help from our fellow man. That's how we're created. That's how we're made. Moving on to number two. Our attitude towards the criticism and the giver of it has more to do with how we relate to it than the fact of whether it's true or not. I know that's kind of long, but our attitude towards the criticism and the giver of it has more to do with how we relate to it than the fact of whether it's true or not. Once there was a man named Dr. Charles Fuller. During a conversation with him, a man's name came up who had been publicly attacking Dr. Fuller. Fuller said, "Yes, God bless him." Another man said, "You don't seem too upset, Dr. Fuller." And Fuller replied, "Why should I let someone else decide how I'm going to act?" If we can somehow think about other people as being potential allies or potential helpers, if we can learn from all these other people's experiences, it can help us tremendously. And we don't need to learn it all on our own. Because if you stubbornly try to learn all of life's lessons all totally on your own, number one, you won't have enough time to learn them all. And number two, by the time you learn some of them, we find we're too old to even put it into practice. Somebody has said, "If what they are saying about you is true, then mend your ways. If it isn't true, forget it and go on and serve the Lord." Someone else has said, "It takes a great person to give sound advice tactfully, but it takes a greater person to accept it graciously." Moving on to number three. There are multiple ways of doing something right. I think we all know that, but somehow that creates a little challenge for us sometimes. And I know schoolboys have some fairly strong opinions on what color of paint makes the best tractor. At least it was when I was in school. And some colors didn't even make the grade. They just weren't even on the charts. But today, we see farms that have blue tractors, of all things. And they're big farms. They have lots of blue tractors. And when I was in school, that would have almost been an insult. No offense if somebody has blue tractors. I don't care. I have an orange one today, of all things. But you see my point. There's multiple ways of doing something, and they can be multiple ways, and they're all right. It can be a farming operation. Some people think milking three times a day is the only way to go. Some people say it's not worth the added stress and hassle. Two times at the end of the month, he still basically shakes out about the same size of paycheck. I don't know. I'm not a farmer. I don't really care personally about that. There's multiple ways of doing it. You can apply that to your building crew, of what part you do first and what part you do last. And while there's principles of right and wrong, you will find in life many times that there is different ways of doing things. And laying all jokes aside, at the end of the project, it gets done, and it's done right. There was just a little different formula for doing it, and it's okay. That's okay. Just because someone else does something differently than you does not mean that you have to criticize them. Nor does it mean that you have to change everything you are doing to exactly match another method. Now, that can be taken to the extreme. There is a point to give suggestions. There is a point to give pointers to someone else. If you see somebody struggling, or if you've learned the hard way and you see somebody else struggling, there's a point of giving them a tip. Nothing wrong with that at all. And there is a point to learning from other people. Sad it is if we can never ever learn from another person, from other people, because we're simply too proud to do that. There's no future in that either. But there is multiple ways of doing something right. Number four, by default, we see things through our own lenses. Now that's an elementary statement, but in real life, it goes a little deeper than that. By default, we see things through our own lenses. And because of that, we tend to excuse ourselves and criticize others. And that is to our fault and our shame. I found a little saying that I'd like to read to illustrate that. When the other fellow is despiteful, he's ugly. When you act that way, it's just your nerves. When the other fellow is set in his ways, he's obstinate. When you are, it's just firmness. When the other fellow spends a lot of money, he's extravagant. When you do, it's just generosity. When the other fellow picks flaws in things, he's cranky. But when you do, you're just discriminating. When the other fellow says what he thinks, he's despiteful or judging. But when you do, you're just being frank. When the other fellow doesn't like your friend, he's prejudiced. But when you don't like his friend, you are simply showing that you are a good judge of human nature. You know, the way you were taught, the things you learned in life, your culture, your upbringing, all have a very distinct tendency to make you who you are by default. That's just how it works. We tend to look at things because of who we are. And, you know, the things in my family as a boy growing up, the things that my dad hated and the things that my dad really liked tend to affect me. And I tend, it's not definitive, but I tend to gravitate towards some of them same thought processes. And that in itself isn't wrong, but it can create some real challenges. And it can create some real stumbling blocks if we're not careful, if we let it get out of hand. You see, by default, we see things through our own lenses. And by default, the way we see things, it registers in our brain as being, this is what it is. And to the other person, he sees it totally different. And so sometimes we tend to criticize each other negatively because of that. All these things, the way you were taught, the things you learned in life, your culture, they all tend to make all of us who we are by default. Whether you're organized or not so organized, whether you're time conscious or maybe not. We tend to judge others by their actions, and we tend to judge ourselves by our intentions. That's native, that's natural thing to do. I intend to do a lot of things. And unfortunately, intentions doesn't make things happen. But I intend to do a lot of good things. And hands down, there's a lot of people that could look on at my life and say, he's not getting a lot of good things done, and that would be true. And I tend to judge myself by my intentions because I intend to do them. Other people can judge me by my actions, and sometimes there's a pretty big difference there. Just something to think about. Many times the tables can be turned against us just as easily. There's as many or more things that can be criticized in myself as what I tend to criticize in others. Once there was a younger couple that got married, and they were at the table one day, and one time he said, "When are you going to start making pie filling like my mother made it?" And she was quiet for a little bit, and then she said, "And when are you going to start making the dough that my father made?" Now, that's a play on words, but you get the point, okay? There's enough things in all of us that as soon as we start attacking or criticizing the other person, they can likely come back. I'm not saying we should, but I'm just saying as a principle, we tend to see things through our own lenses, and each and every one of us tend to do that. Number five. We will be criticized and misunderstood at times in life. And I know this can be taken too far, but we will be criticized and misunderstood at times in life. It's inevitable. And I will also say that the more influence you have in life, the more prone you are to this. It was back quite a few years ago, I don't remember exactly when, but Colin Powell was talked about and suggested as being a potential candidate for president of the United States. And somebody was talking to Colin Powell about that, about him possibly running for president. And I don't know Colin Powell, I don't know his character, I don't know his life, but his response, I thought, exemplified something pretty wise. Colin said, why would I want to run for president and be the president of the United States? He said, when you are at the top of the pole, so to speak, or when you are at the top, he said, you're in a position where everybody sees all of your mistakes. There's a fair amount of truth in that. But it does also prove the point that we will be criticized and we will be misunderstood at times in life. Again, if I could read another little story to illustrate this. Once there was a father and his son that were taking a donkey to the market. The man sat on the beast and the boy walked. And people along the way said, "What a terrible thing. A big strong fellow sitting on the donkey's back while the youngster has to walk." So the father dismounted and the son took his place. Soon onlookers remarked, "How terrible, this man walking and the little boy sitting." At that, they both got on the donkey's back, only to hear others say, "How cruel, two people sitting on one donkey." Off they came, but bystanders commented, "How crazy, the donkey has nothing on his back and two people are walking." Finally, they were both carrying the donkey, and they never did make it to the market. I'm just give it as an illustration that you will find it in life that you will be criticized and you will be misunderstood sometimes. And I know there is a balance in this whole thing. I want to be careful. I don't want to get off balance, but it says in Scripture that in the mouth of two or three witnesses shall every deed or something be established. Okay. It also says in the book of James that a double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. I would simply say that being criticized is not a sin. How we relate to the criticism is the acid test. Number six. Believe the best in people. I know that's a stretch, and that's hard to do sometimes, but if we can at least have that as our first mindset, that's our first intent, to believe the best in people. So how does that look in practical everyday life? Well, I'm going to give some suggestions, and these are not definitive. These are just some things to think about. But can we give people some time? In other words, when you see a problem with someone in the way they're doing something, can we give them some time to see it themselves, possibly? When people criticize you, can you believe that they want what is best for you? That's a stretch, but if we can at least have that intent and that mindset, that when someone comes to us, when someone comes to me, that we simply can take it that there's probably something there for me, and they mean it for my good. The best way to help someone is to be in a position where you're able to help them. That's a simple statement, I know. But this happens when there is a good relationship. And good relationships take time to build. And good relationships need to be built before, most times before good constructive criticism can be given. Before you condemn someone, walk a mile in his moccasins. Old, old proverb, old saying, but very, very true. Many times you will find in life, church life, when you're just rubbing shoulders with people you relate to, that sometimes they'll do something or they'll act in a certain way, and right away you think, that was dumb. That was really stupid. I mean, why would you do something like that? Only to find out a little bit later on, once you heard, once you understood, once you could really see where they're coming from and why they did what they did, then it totally changed the whole dynamic. And then you say, oh yeah, now I get it. And maybe it still wasn't the smartest thing they did, but there was a whole lot more reason as to why they did what they did. Believe the best in people. Great is the man who can accept criticism. Greater yet is he who welcomes it. But greatest of all is he who knows how to administer it in a spirit of love and sensitivity without causing pain and chagrin. That was a quote I came across. I thought it was very well put. I would simply say, practice the golden rule when you're giving criticism. When we believe the best in people, there is a need, in our opinion. I'm sorry, when we believe the best in people and there is a need, in our opinion, we must relate to it as though they haven't seen or understood everything yet. Not so much that they are just simply being obstinate or rebellious. Again, it's that whole concept of seeing things through our lenses and the fact of not understanding or knowing where somebody else is coming from. Another quote, there's so much good in the worst of us and so much bad in the best of us that it ill behooves the best of us to criticize the rest of us. May God help us to be the kind of people that can humbly accept criticism and learn from it, and thereby become a better person. And may God help us, when giving criticism, to give it sincerely, in love, seeking the best in the other person. Let's kneel for prayer.